This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Well, the electricity minister, Khonsiencho Ramakgopa, says Eskom's new CEO, Dan Marokane, will offer a comprehensive outline of a revised generation recovery plan, that will seek to integrate recommendations arising from various expert reports, and we're going to be engaging one of those expert reports into the state of the coal power stations, including this report that's recently just been released, and it's the VGBE report, commissioned, of course, by National Treasury. And none of us are not aware of the issues and the troubles that Eskom have been going into. And so Treasury and government having commissioned various reports and questions are raising. They've delivered their report, issues around the report, why it was sat on for so long and so long and so long and so long and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, this particular report that was commissioned is a VGBE-led consortium. It looked at 14 coal stations and was done between March and May last year. Khushe Moleshe is my guest, an energy expert. Khushe, welcome to Power 98.7. Welcome to Power 98 Power Perspective. How are you?
Good evening. I'm okay, thank you. I can't complain. I hope you're good as well.
I'm good. You know, I was about to say, Khushe, you know, you have particularly all the reasons to complain. You're in the energy space. You would understand it better than we would have an understanding of the energy space. And so I would think that maybe, you know, your understanding of those particular issues gives you more gray hair and gives you more questions than answers sometimes. Is that the case sometimes when you look at everything that's going on around Eskom, the energy space, and how we're dealing with it, that you have sometimes more questions than answers, or do you have the answers at hand?
Sometimes it's much more frustrating. Sometimes there's hope. It's a roller coaster.
So think about us poor individuals who might not have the kind of understanding that you have, Khushe, and how we're then particularly dealing with these particular issues then. Do you have sympathy for Khonsiencho Ramakgopa and the role that he took and the position he's in and the responsibilities he has and the mandate that he has to deliver on? Do you have compassion and sympathy for him? Or is it one where, look, you got the job, you're being paid for it, do it?
And you didn't ask any questions, you accepted it.
Exactly.
Part of me says that. Part of me has sympathy for him because, I mean, he's brave. He was taking on a difficult job. And so I guess if he says no, who else must help and do it?
Yeah. Khushe, the report, you know, let me have an understanding as how you have an abbreviation for it. And you've got this consortium, right? VGBE consortium, and we can go through who the consortium is, and I don't want to do that. But is it generally called the VGBE led consortium?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Okay, it's not some funny acronym that says VGBE or something. So it's
no,
the VG.
That's what it's called. Yeah.
Okay. So let's look at this particular report, and I have various questions around it. Let me ask you this first. Eskom officials and sometimes the minister Ramakgopa will tell you, and our country will tell you, and various analysts and experts like yourself will tell you that within Eskom there are engineers and all sorts of people who know what they're doing, and they, you know, they do have the particular skill that is required of them also in Eskom, apart from all the other stuff that we are seeing. But you know, people will argue that we do have the skill within Eskom to, you know, fix what we have and or engage with the problems of Eskom. Do you Or are you one of those who questions why VGBE was brought in the first place to have some form of analysis of what's going on in Eskom? Because some will argue, and they have argued, that within Eskom there are these engineers, there are these experts. These engineers and experts over a time have been reporting to Parliament and various commissions in Parliament and various entities reporting to government, and very capable reports have come from them also. And in essence, you didn't really need the VGBE. You could have just asked Eskom to put a thorough report in front of everybody, and they would have done it, you know, much more cheaper than VGBE would have done. What's your understanding? Or is your understanding that as many particular insights into Eskom gives us or gets us closer to the solution?
Well, I think that from a Treasury perspective, what they were looking for is independence. Mm-hmm. There was a time when I think that the information could have looked not as credible, yeah, coming from Eskom, yeah, because it was different. They would say different things.
Yeah.
The report doesn't come back with totally new,
yeah,
issues, but it's independent and detailed. For instance, the fact that it's saying that the system, the reporting systems or governance, mm, or procedures, or the way that people within Eskom report to, mm, each other is problematic. Probably Eskom would not be as critical of themselves, mm, as they should be. That's a non-technical issue, mm, but it's very, very critical, mm, in terms of how to propose issues going forward. So I think the independence of it, so that Treasury can know that at, mm, least they can count on it, especially because they are advancing money to taking over some of the debt that Eskom has.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if they take over debt and don't look at sustainability of the entity, they could find themselves in the same position in the future.
Sure.
And I think they want to provide conditions for Eskom to say, do ABCD, otherwise we are not going to help,
mm,
you.
Mm. Does it also matter that, you know, people who have looked at this particular consortium, independent German Association of Power Plant Engineers, International Technical Association for the Generation of Storage and Electricity, and then also heat, comes with some kind of reputation? I suppose it gives some reputational backing, some standing to the report then, in essence, and backs up what you also would have said, apart from the independence then of the report in itself.
Yes, so the consortium is quite capable. They've looked at similar plants all over the world, mm-hmm, because again, measuring yourself and just looking at what you are doing instead of benchmarking it against industry standards is not helpful. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they say, this is where you are, Eskom, but generally the benchmarks internationally are ABCD, and they're talking about things they have done, mm-hmm, things they've seen, things they have experienced on. Mm-hmm. So they've got the authority to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Without somebody questioning them.
Yeah, talking about questioning, a lot of people have questioned the time it spent within government and or Treasury, the report. A period of 6 months, just being released last week. So a period of 6 months that they would have sat on it, in essence, since it's come out. I mean, they did look at these 14 coal mines between March and May 2023. They would have given a report. 6 months, the government would have sat on it. Do you read anything into that, or is it just government, you know, being red taped and government going about its business really, really slow, and that's a characteristic of government? Or, you know, as others, you know, are pointing fingers and saying maybe there was a little bit more sinister? Because what some people are worried about is that, you know, the report goes the same way as many, many other, you know, sorts of insights would have gone and reports would have gone, where government asks for something, the individuals then hand back to government a detailed, you know, copy of what needs to be done, and government sits on it. Are you perturbed by the 6 month period, or is there an understanding in your mind of why they would have held on to it for 6 months?
My understanding is that they, maybe they, you know, they, it's partly red tape as well. because it has taken a bit longer.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that there have been consultation within government to be able to try and look at ways or propose interventions.
Yeah.
I do believe that the report, even though it has taken 6 months, the input has been taken up on board already by ESCOM. One example is there, the very focused efforts to ensure that they do maintenance and increase it, even if it comes at the expense of the energy availability factor, you know.
Mm.
This, if you have noticed the trend with ESCOM, is that they would maybe more than 6 months ago, they were at less than 3,000 megawatts or around 3,000 megawatts planned maintenance. The effort, the emphasis was on having the plants available to run them and so to avoid load shedding. And the report is very clear in the sense that it says that even if you compromise and have load shedding, do not compromise on maintenance. And we've seen figures of above 7,000 all the way up to even 10,000 megawatts of projects that have been off due to maintenance. And even when you would be at stages that are higher, stage 4, at some point you reach stage 6, ESCOM did not compromise in this regard. So you can see that they've taken on board already in that some of the recommendations.
What? Where do you put this particular report, talking about what you're talking about and taking on board some of the recommendations which they have already? And when I looked at ESCOM's response to the report, it was kind of like, we've noted it, we've understood it, and we there was almost also a kind of cautionary statement that said, we're continuing with the plan we also have because it's a board approved plan. And so that is the sort of plan that they have internally that they also, you know, need to implement. This would be additional, you know, information and or instructions that needed to be taken on. The minister has said, you know, that this report, of course, is not one that he can enforce on ESCOM because ESCOM does have a board and ESCOM does have its own, you know, applications as to how it deals with stuff. When ESCOM looked at this particular report, I suppose also, you know, maybe they didn't appreciate the fact that, you know, someone went abroad and brought in experts when they themselves thought they were maybe the experts to deal with this particular crisis themselves. But the ESCOM reaction to the report itself, and ESCOM's own, you know, plans to deal with the energy crisis that we have in the country. Do you think that in as much as they've taken on board that they've accepted the report in maybe the goodwill that the report was intended to be given to them?
I think so. I mean, the example that I just made of the fact that they could reduce maintenance when we have higher stages of load shedding, so that there's more plant availability and they tap into that, so that they can satisfy all of us as customers and stakeholders. But the report has been unequivocal in saying that even at the expense of load shedding, you should not be compromising on maintenance.
Absolutely.
And they really have stuck to that.
Yeah.
They've done that. And in terms of the internal people management skills and all of that, I don't know to what extent they would take on board. For instance, the report refers to the structures within ESCOM, where there's so many reporting structures instead of having a very simplified structure. I don't know to what extent they're taking on board those kind of recommendations.
The line gone. The line gone. Khushe, of course, Moleshe is an energy expert. The line there breaking. We're going to try to bring her back. We're talking, of course, of the VGBE-led consortium report. They spent some time looking at our coal stations. Let me bring Khushe back into the conversation. Khushe, you were talking about or alluding to, you know, the management structure and the report talking to that and saying you don't know how much they will take those particular aspects on board.
Yes. For instance, the structure that Eskom has in terms of the reporting lines and how much headquarters are involved in the operational matters and people at power station managers not having the autonomy to be able to make the decisions they need to make. Those are very, very specific recommendations to say, make this structure simple, give the power station management the ability to make the decisions they need to make as quickly as they need to do. To me, it's a very, very straightforward recommendation. Mm. And if Eskom were to take those on board, I mean, that would be helpful. For instance, they are saying coal division, let that be a separate reporting division, have a simplified kind of a structure. The structure is really cumbersome. Mm. And they are saying that, interestingly enough, again, the beauty of having an independent entity talking to the fact that from a resources point of view, it's not necessarily a challenge. Mm. That the financials that we've been going on and on about being an issue, it's not. They do have a budget that is slightly above international standards. Mm. It's the way that they do things. So you need to clean up. For me, if as a Eskom's board as well as the CEO, I would welcome those kind of very specific recommendations. They do complement also Eskom with respect to the transmission division, which we all know is one of the divisions that has been doing much better within the Eskom. Yeah.
Do you think that when a report like this lands and you know what's in it, and I want to get to those key recommendations in a second, but you know, common sense would suggest and reading between the lines would suggest that if you are going to, you know, receive 254 billion bailout from Eskom, 254 billion rand, that you know, Treasury would have you on a short leash. And in essence, you have your back to the wall, and you don't really have much options. Is that one way of looking at it as well? Where, you know, the essence of the report is there, the importance of the report is there, but the fact that, you know, there is this particular bailout, and the conditions that you know, Treasury has put to those particular bailout does kind of mean that there's a very short leash here that Treasury and government has over Eskom, and so not much room to maneuver anyway.
Yes, and I think they should, actually, because this is money that could be going elsewhere. Mm. And we know that there's been a huge lapse in governance within Eskom, which has led to some of the issues that we see. The build program, the way into which it was managed, and the cost escalations there shouldn't really be there. So some of these problems shouldn't be there, and they should be mitigated in a way that gives certainty that if we as stakeholders or as owners of Eskom, meaning the people, have to cough up money for this, we should have, they have assurance that this will lead to a sustainable Eskom, because Eskom is a dominant player in the market. We don't have any much room to play with because they dominate the market. So if they don't turn around things, they don't become sustainable. It's a drain on the fiscus. It's a drain on the people of South Africa. Mm. And we have to keep on paying for it through the tariffs. Mm. So definitely, I think that they shouldn't have leeway, no empathy. There should be a turnaround that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah, Khushe, you were talking about proper maintenance work, right? And that's what, of course, they really, really, you know, speak about that. But there's also the complex management that they speak of. They talk of low morale, they talk of low accountability, they also engage slow procurement, and then that proper maintenance work that needs to be done. And they say, where in relation to the proper maintenance work which you've raised, and which is an important component, they say, even at the cost of more short-term power costs or cuts, you have to maintain. Is that a proper sort of way to deal with it? That swallow the bitter pill, but you have to maintain because maintenance is going to get you into more trouble.
Yes, and I think they are very clear saying that a division should be focused purely on the management of the fleet operation and maintenance to tackle this underperformance and unavailability of those coal fleet. Mm. And they are saying, even going further, don't burden the people that are at the operational level with strategic issues that are more about load shedding and government, because that's a political issue. And even things like that have to do with the just energy transition. All these political issues should not be a burden to the people that are working on the power.
So give them their budget and let them get on.
Yes, streamline everything. Let them get on with their work. I mean, you would also be frustrated if you knew, as you alluded to earlier on, some of the people are capable of doing the work that they need to do. But there's a lot of interference that comes from head office, and that comes as a result of other stakeholders, like your shareholder, like probably the Minister of Electricity, bringing on a lot of panicking because there's probably elections, you know. So if you allow them to do what they need to do, stick to what they know, and don't burden them with Eskom power plants, for instance, there was a talk at some point that some of them were eminent for decommissioning. So if you're working there as a staff member and have that uncertainty, you are likely to not have much confidence. And we know that there's been a lot of people that have left, that are capable, have left Eskom as a result of frustrations with respect to systems. So I agree.
Khusha, the key recommendations, there's one that I want to begin with. And I'm not sure how Eskom would take it, but you know, dotted along these particular 600-page report are constant references to treasury, and then this one that says an interim independent expert team, which reports directly to the treasury, should be engaged with immediate effect and permanently situated at each site with a small oversight management team. So an interim independent expert team, which reports then directly to Treasury. You know, Treasury then obviously going to be having eyes and ears within the system and the capacity then to have first-hand knowledge through these particular experts then of what's then going on within the engine room of Eskom.
There used to be a saying that when you're a consultant, you have to create more work for yourself. I don't know if that's what is happening here.
I'm a brilliant Khusha.
Because on the one hand, the report is very eloquent in saying that from a governance point of view, clear the lines. Don't interfere.
Yeah.
Don't be on the people's faces.
Hence, I read this one to you.
Job. Give them the mandate.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you create another additional layer.
Yeah.
You already have DPE that gives Eskom performance measures to say this is how you perform. You should perform as a shareholder. That makes sense. And then they should step outside after giving them and let the board with their management handle the strategy on how to deliver these things.
Yeah.
That's how you do things. Then you already have the Minister of Electricity breathing down Eskom's neck when it comes to performance on load shedding and all of that. And then you want to create an additional, another additional reporting line to Treasury.
Yeah.
It should be, in my view, the shareholder continuing to hold them to account to say these are the measures for your performance, meet these goals, how you meet them, that's up to you. Board and executive forming that strategy, that say, okay, we'll refine according to what these are saying, we'll take these on board, we'll streamline the management structure, and we'll make people accountable, and then let the supporting the ESCOM personnel with what they require from a budgetary point of view, from a capability point of view, bringing in the right people with the right skill, from a reskilling of some of them. And that's what they should, and then saying that, give us a report then occasionally to say, how are we, as we agree on these issues, how are you doing on that? That should be the way it goes, not another additional layer. I don't agree with that part of the report.
Sure. You know, Khushe, help me understand, because a lot of sometimes the technology is that is utilized that ordinary folk would not have an understanding of. But something that we now do have an understanding of, because it is spoken of almost all the time, is the energy availability, the factor, the EAF. So when the minister speaks, you will hear the energy available factor. When, you know, the new CEO, Dan Morokane, speaks, you will hear about that. When you know, the president speaks, he will refer to the energy availability factor, the EAF. And then this report says, because every single point, you know, I think that has been maybe, you know, the whole essence of what maybe the minister Ramakgopa has been, you know, engaged in, is to show us, you know, in essence, that that the energy availability factor, this main metric for assessing, you know, the performance is stable, you know, and that he has been at ends to sort of illustrate to us. And then the report comes and says, actually, you all are too fixated with this particular EAF, and it must come to an end, because so help me out here. On the one end, we have been drowning in this particular term. And a term we didn't know when we started, you know, understanding what was going on at ESCOM. And suddenly I know exactly what it means to it. It refers to the average percentage of power stations available that they can dispatch their energy at any one given time. I now understand it, because I've heard, you know, the minister speak about it endlessly. I've heard all of them speak about it endlessly. And then the report comes and says there's an absolute fixation with it. Why are we either fixated with it, or why then should we be more fixated with it? Because and then why is it important?
So ultimately, all the objectives of fixing ESCOM are supposed to lead to an improved energy availability factor.
Yeah.
But there's different ways in which that energy availability factor can be achieved. So you could have plants available by lowering your maintenance. Say there was a time when we were at stage 4 or stage 6, and our maintenance was around 9,000 megawatts. Theoretically, you could have 6,000 of planned maintenance and take the 3,000 to reduce your unavailability, so increase your availability by compromising on the planned maintenance. So what the report is saying that, yes, you can aim for an energy availability factor that is higher, but not at the expense of maintenance. Because maintenance is what is going to give you the sustainability or longevity of the plants in the long run. So that is where the difference is. How do you achieve that energy availability factor? Do you succumb to pressure from the public and say, okay, let's postpone some of the maintenance and do some of it so that we can have more available? Or do you buckle down and do 9,000 even if you are at stage 6? That is where the question is. They are still planning for energy availability to increase, because the one way that the minister has been referring to is to deal with unplanned breakdowns, to deal with the inefficiency of the plants, because some of the plants are available. However, they are not operating at full capacity, which is you now need to fix the issues that are causing that, so that you have the full plant available at the total capacity that is that is installed, so you can have more available. So there is still a focus on it, but it should not be at the expense of planned maintenance.
Are there things to be learned when we talk about the plants and the units and the EAF? I'm going back there, and the EAF and the production of that particular EAF as per what Kusile maybe is producing, and you know, whenever I'm listening to a particular report, it suggests that Kusile's EAF is pretty high. Are there lessons then in, you know, as much as people talk about Kusile and the failures and all of these, and you know, and the extensions and the money and non-generation of either this or that, are there still lessons to be learned from Kusile even at this particular point around issues of, for example, the EAF and what they have been able to achieve there?
Yes, there are issues to be learned from Kusile. Mm. For instance, the fact that they had the stacks affected was due to maintenance issues not being done according to what they are supposed to do. Mm. They have done a great job in remedying that situation. You also have Kusile, not just Kusile, but even Medupi. The Unit 4 at Medupi was being commissioned. Mm. It's 800 megawatts. Mm. And for some reason, people not having enough time to sleep or to change their shifts made them to make a silly mistake that is unprecedented in the industry. Mm. And we lost for almost 2 years that unit, which could be available. Mm. So following procedures and being pedantic about that would have prevented Unit 4 not being available, could have prevented some of the units at Kusile not being available. For instance, creating a redundancy where you don't have all of these plants having one stack between them and having each its own stack. I don't want to get into the details. But some of the things are very silly reasons why we had some of the plants not being available. Example being a Unit 4 at Medupi, which was being brought back after fixing the defects for many years, you know, and then somebody just does something wrong and they ignite it and it burns down and we literally don't have anything. So if the procedures were like any other utility in the world, you're normally very pedantic about those health, safety, you know, issues. And that there was a lapse there and it was costly. So there are lessons to be learned in tightening those and even potentially putting performance measures that relate to that. Because what are you going to say when that has happened? You're going to say, oh, sorry, too bad, this is what happened. Mm. So you have to be preventative in the way that you do things by making sure that procedures are adhered to very, very seriously.
Khushe, how has the market and the industry taken to Dan Morakane, the new CEO? Well, not even you know, long in the job, would have started now in March, but no stranger to Eskom. My understanding, he would have been an executive from 2010 already to around 2015, and he is the 11th CEO. So fine, he returns to a broken power utility, very different from the period maybe that he was in 2010 to 2015, but new in the job. And there he is, Dan Morakane, the CEO. How has the market, you know, and the industry taken to him? You know, is it one of those, let's give him a chance, or does the market already know the man and understand the man? Or is it one of those that gives him, you know, enough rope first? Or is it the other one that says, oh yeah, no, you know, he's been here, he understands it, and gives him, you know, the benefit of the doubt?
I think the market has generally welcomed Dan Morakane for these reasons. One is that he is familiar with Eskom and should at least have some ideas of what needs to be done. Two is coming to an Eskom that at least is stabilized from a board perspective in terms of capabilities, in terms of seniority, in terms of having a full board that is capable, that also is looking at some of these things. Secondly, that Dan has also looked at a turnaround strategy outside of Eskom. Because sometimes you can work for an entity for so long and you look at things from one perspective only. Mm. So the fact that he's looked at a turnaround strategy for another entity to brings in a strength that is additional to what he used to have. I think the other welcome area is the fact that he at least has worked for entities like Petro SA, has an understanding of the oil and gas sector outside of Eskom. Well, that's one of the other critical elements to supporting Eskom in what they are trying to do. And so those are the elements. And also the other welcome issue is to have certainty at a management or an executive level in terms of whatever decision that if Eskom were to streamline now, as recommended by the report, the governance issues, the structure, that needs somebody with authority that knows that they are there full time and not acting in a position where they can't take long-term decision. So you have somebody who now the buck stops with him, is going to be able to say, okay, yeah, I agree with the report, or no, let's tweak it in this way. We need to restructure and make sure that we streamline the processes. Mm. So that will give more certainty than having somebody acting and not knowing whether when the King's executive is going to like the proposed changes or not. You have that certainty. So it's welcome, and he's being given an opportunity to breathe and be able to take on board all of the initiatives that are done and come up with a proper strategy to mitigate what is happening. And we've already seen, the mention of the RoTech within Eskom being that is being strengthened to make sure that you don't always have external consultants coming in and telling Eskom what to do, but you build capacity within to be able to support your operations is one of the examples that possibly if it takes on board could be a strengthening capacity within Eskom.
Khushe, we've been talking about the VGBE report and we spoke about it, you know, at length about what it's recommending and all sorts of things. But there is that board approved turnaround plan that you know, Dan Morakane has to ultimately use as his Bible and then take all the other reports that he then has and you know, and work with those as well. That board approved turnaround plan that you know, is spoken about, and sometimes it's, you know, various issues and then more get put about. But there is now ultimately a plan, and it's board approved, and that's what Dan Morakane, you know, is going to use as his Bible. Do you have any sentiments on that particular plan as to, you know, its standing and or, you know, its effectiveness? Because some people are beginning to say it's early days, but it's beginning to yield benefits. Are you also you know, seeing the benefits of that particular plan?
Yes. So the plan, I mean, the 10-point plan looks at this report, in my view, will be just input to enhance that that plan. I think that there's synergies between that plan and what some of the issues raised in the report have been considered. Obviously, Eskom will have the context of being inside Eskom, and some of the things may not be recommended exactly as, may not be done exactly as the report recommends. Mm. But if you look at it, there are 10 major issues that it's looking at. One is the plant performance, which we've all been talking about. That's what the report refers to. And then there's a focus on people in terms of their skills and capabilities, strengthening that. So that's already aligned to what the report is saying. Then it talks about procedures, and actually it talks about something Eskom has also been complaining about to a large extent, which is the procurement processes with National Treasury and helping to find the process which will shorten the way that procurement is done. I mean, procurement of spare parts is an internationally known process. It's no rocket science how it's done. But Eskom has been struggling with this. That has to do with how our own, call it bureaucracies as a government, and there could be a streamlining there. So that's already aligned. And then it talks about coal management from a quality point of view, quantity point of view. It talks about compliance with environmental standards, which have increased to a large extent, bringing in additional capacity. Eskom has been talking about importing potentially from the region additional capacity, and that's already on the cards. And then it talks about, I mentioned earlier, on Rotec, as well as the funding from Treasury. So most of those things are already aligned to the report. It's up to Eskom now to say how do we then put that strategy together and refine all of those proposals and make them into a plan that makes sense.
Sure. Khushe Molesha, I'm going to say thank you so much for joining me here on Power Perspective tonight. Thank you so much for the insights and making sense of sometimes, a very, very complex conversation that is not sometimes understood in the way that it needs to be understood. But thank you so much for bringing the insights that you have to the conversation. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And you can bet on it that I'll be, calling this particular number again whenever we need to engage these energy crises and all what's going on at Eskom. So, Khushe, you started something here. And so we'll be talking a lot to each other. And I don't think that's a bad thing, Khushe.
It's not, except I should be sleeping.
<I'm joking.
laughs> Of course, anytime.
Thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Khushe Molesha, energy expert. Yeah, wow. She knows her stuff, that one. She really, really, really does. And some of these things are very technical and complicated and difficult to understand just because, of course, they are not things that we deal with every day. They are energy related, very specific and category related as well.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.